You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Hello, welcome to the Daily Nationalist. This is Matthew Raphael Johnson, and I am recording this in the evening of January 22nd, 2025. Now, I think I've heard everything. The Financial Times and a few other ridiculous publications like that are making the claim that the Ukrainian economy is growing and recovering. All these bogus statistics. They don't have power. They don't have a workforce. All of their value added is in Eastern Ukraine and Crimea. They're entirely dependent on Western aid for everything. What's growing? Nothing functions. And it just goes to show you that these statistics are quite often bogus. God knows how they're, what they're counting as economic growth. But it is an issue worth discovering and talking about in general, because the war has been lost, for a very long time. It's been artificially extended. But what comes next is a pressing issue. There's no hope for a normal life in the foreseeable future. The trauma of the population just by itself. Certainly, Eastern Ukraine will never go back to the fourth world morass of Ukraine, but there will be large tracts of land, mostly depopulated, to be administered by the Americans and BlackRock. Now, part of the Russian agenda was to take and protect Russian parts of Ukraine. And if that's sufficient for them, it was its initial purpose, although not the entire purpose, the regime will either continue its war with Russia by other means or shift its focus to China. But in addition to that, Russia always, from the beginning, reasonably demanded that Ukraine be neutral and demilitarized, something, by the way, that the West had no problem giving to Stalin in the cases of Finland and Austria. Now, I've said this before, but only now is it even alternative sources are starting to realize this. Zelensky, from the very beginning, has this alarming desire to turn Ukraine into what he calls a big Israel, which is just another variation of the new Khazaria theme that I've been talking about for a decade or more. Ukraine's ruling class is almost entirely Jewish and non-Ukrainian, but there's a lot here that no one has noticed, even those who have talked about him saying this. Looking to Zionism is not exactly a coincidence. But once he was installed as president in 2019, Zelensky, right in his inaugural address, and this is before the war, "We must become the Israelis, following their example, in defense of their native land." Their native land. Of course, no one in the media picked up on the implications of that. His words were mostly suppressed anyway. But there are two distinct but complementary meanings to his statement. The first is that the new Khazaria plan is still taken seriously by the world's Jews, possibly making that part of Ukraine that remains a Jewish homeland once it's depopulated. So, for example, if the present circumstances of Israel, where it is now, becomes untenable in the near future, it may be another quote-unquote promised land. The second is that since Ukraine has no functional economy, its value exists only in that it's willing to send waves of Gentile men to the front. It pays its debt to the regime in blood. It can only exist in the Western orbit as an attack dog against Russia, since it offers nothing else. Their only option is to make Ukraine into an armed camp, regardless of what anyone wants. September of 2022, and even earlier in April, Zelensky met with the NATO elite and he announced his plan. He had briefly fled the country, as I said, I think I was alone in saying that, using the excuse that he needed to meet NATO leaders. But he returned with Western backing for the Big Israel project. He told reporters, his kept reporters, that he would be building a reconstituted Big Israel. Now, of course, Zelensky is not an independent player. He works for the regime Zionist elite on both sides of the Atlantic. But his comments did not come out of nowhere. And Nukazadia, of course, predates the 21st century. The Atlantic Council, which essentially is NATO's official research arm, published a bizarre roadmap shortly after that, exploring how it's possible to turn Ukraine into a Big Israel. It was written by Daniel Shapiro, the American ambassador to Israel under Obama. Shapiro said that the two countries share more than you might think, although nothing in the document, you know, reading this thing, suggests any knowledge whatsoever of Ukrainian life. But the fact that the Atlantic Council, the American ambassador, actually wrote this and put this together, it suggests that this is official U.S. policy. Now, the media in the West is tightly controlled, maybe not as tightly controlled as in Kiev, and they have no conception what this means. But even earlier than this, April 5th, 2022, he said, "We will definitely become a Big Israel, an Israel with its own personality. This is a utopian fantasy." This was suppressed by the press at the time. And I've quoted this before, I'll do it again. He said, "We should not be surprised that there will be representatives of the military or the National Guard at all places, supermarkets, cinemas. There, there'll be people with weapons." So he's talking about building a totalitarian order. Now, this doesn't have anything to do with security, since having armed men in this movie theater has no relationship at all to any legitimate defense interests. It is a totalitarian means of keeping this Jewish financial oligarchy in power. I first brought this up in 2022. Of course, given the nature of the war, that was a long time ago. January 2025, it's another fantasy of the regime. But this conflict, we're now up to about 1 million Ukrainian men and boys killed or severely injured by this, which would be the core of any future rebellion. The country is permanently traumatized, and it's going to be difficult if it's capable of concerted action in the short term. The Ukrainian economy was barely industrialized after the eastern regions left in 2014. All that remained was a parasitic oligarchical regime that called itself New Kazaria, like its namesake, an intensely corrupt idea and a corrupt group of people. The war just gave Kiev an excuse as to why its economic life is in shambles. But if you've been listening to me for any length of time, I was talking about their complete collapse years before the war broke out. So Zelensky, in the name of democracy, wants to build, with American assistance, a totalitarian system as a financial and military dependency of the U.S. Of course, that's what Kiev's been for two decades at least. But this is a new step in its total lack of sovereignty. Kiev would then reproduce Israel's, quote, approach to chronic security challenges against really what amounts to a constructed and imaginary Russian other existing only in the minds of the system. Russia doesn't threaten anyone except the criminal billionaires in Kiev. Neither Ukrainians nor Americans have been asked about any of this, nor will they be. Americans are, according to this plan, will be sending billions of aid to Ukraine in perpetuity, just like Israel itself. But that's typical of liberal democracy, too. But even that's unraveling. There's a few quotes from that bizarre roadmap from the Atlantic Council. So this is official doctrine here. The Israeli model goes further than Zelensky's vision of security services deployed to civilian spaces. Most young Israeli adults serve in the military, and many are employed in security-related professions following their service. A common purpose unites the citizenry, making them ready to endure shared sacrifice. Civilians recognize their responsibility to follow security protocols and contribute to the cause. Some even arm themselves, although under strict supervision, to do so. The widespread mobilization of Ukrainian society and collective defense suggests that the country has this potential. In his comments, Zelensky reflected on this reality, where he said security would come from the strength of every house, every building, every person. Now you notice, he's talking about an armed citizenry, although there is in parentheses, though under strict supervision. Well, why would that be the case? It's a Jewish dictatorship ready to purge any untrustworthy elements from bearing arms, of course. The obsessive cohesion of the Jews could hardly be reproduced in a very deeply divided and dying Ukraine. Shapiro's probably aware of this. The ignorance, the vague, typical propagandistic terms suggests a tremendous ignorance. But there is no parallel between the two states. Ukrainians don't control foreign governments. They don't access the trillions of dollars that Jews can, collectively around the world. Zionism requires a very tight control of foreign media and foreign policy apparatus, at least among the major Gentile states. The fantasy continues. Although it relies on U.S. assistance, Israel also chooses homegrown technology solutions for many of its greatest challenges. Multi-layer rocket and missile defenses, counter-drone systems, and tunnel detection technology are just recent examples. Ukraine, already home to bright technological minds, will know what threats it faces more than any partner. Investing in its own solutions will allow it to be most responsive and adapt to new threats. Calling this a fantasy, really, it gives a bad name to fantasies. Ukraine doesn't have a functional economy. It's experienced nothing but decline from the 1990s. Its billionaires function entirely from corruption, rents, stripping assets, and they're ready to flee at a moment's notice. Yes, Ukraine had a high-tech sector under the Soviets. That was a long time ago. It doesn't produce anything. In my opinion, only a Cossack-based military coup, throwing the EU and NATO out, could ever set things right, and that would be a very long trip. It has to look to the east rather than the satanic west. The very satanic west that is presently sending hundreds of thousands of their best boys to a needless death. But this imitation of a stereotyped conception of Israel, using the most vague language to create a massive security state that serves to protect the interests of these same oligarchs. Of course, with full control over the media, official ideology, and the entire private sector. Now, there are no state-run assets to sell off anymore. Its best minds have long since emigrated to Russia or the U.S. Shapiro goes further in this stupid blueprint. He says, Israel continues to face the challenge of ending its conflict with the Palestinians in ways that ensure both its security and the Palestinian self-determination. But within Israel itself, a constant focus on security hasn't prevented the upholding of core democratic institutions and practices. Zelensky seems aware of this tension, which will require constant maintenance, but also that democracy is a prerequisite. An authoritarian state is impossible in Ukraine, he said. The layers of fantasy and contradiction and lies here. It's hard to tell where one starts and the other begins. Of course, no one in Ukraine wants this. If it ever happens, it will be imposed on the population through forced purges and terror. But that's perfectly consistent with, according to the regime, with being a democracy. The war of extermination on Gaza and the West Bank, going back decades, is, according to the Atlantic Council, perfectly consistent with core democratic institutions. Ukraine under Zelensky is a one-party state with a state-controlled media that essentially serves to protect the elite from the population. The population, completely traumatized, lives in fear of conscription, prison, or worse. Its best men are gone. You have the mass slaughter on the battlefield, the total collapse of the economy decades ago, and the near complete destruction of Russian interests in that part of Ukraine that Kiev controls. These are official policies. The present Kiev regime uses force and conscription to silence dissent. Now, the present apparatus took power in, you know, I'm not sure if it's 2004 or 2014. It could be both. There were both coups, so to speak. But 2014 was more thoroughgoing. It never had the broad support of the population. Of course, it's a functional colony of the regime. The Kiev state has zero legitimacy and is deeply unpopular, although the same could be said of the United States. Hamas, Hezbollah, Putin, they're all highly popular and highly trusted and elected. No one asked for the violent attacks on the Russian language or the Orthodox Church, but that's precisely the policies of Lenin and Stalin, too. Israel is a state based on terrorism, destroying civilian settlements daily in the territories and now Syria, Lebanon. Can you imagine if anything like this were to be imposed on Ukraine? What a drain. The economy would have to be built from the ground up, but it's not capable of producing anything that the West wants. The West is already overloaded with products. I mean, at best, it would become a raw materials exporter to the Western world, a place where labor is both docile and cheap. At worst, it would be another Kosovo, an economy entirely based on drugs and human trafficking. Frank Wright wrote recently in Global Research, he says, internally, this would likely mirror the transition from a democracy to a security state. Well, for a long time, there's been no democratic state in Kiev, in any definition of the term, beyond the fact that since 2004, it hasn't been an independent state at all. Of course, he doesn't ask whether those two options are mutually exclusive. Given the nature of liberalism, they require each other. Liberalism normally takes power at the barrel of a gun. If the Israeli model were somehow followed, it would likely reproduce this permanent state of war with its neighbors, as well as with huge sections of its own population that Ukraine is certainly in no position to sustain. Israel can barely do it. And the Israelis are even noticing how unsustainable it is in their own country. Out-migration from Israel since the Hamas attack has been relatively high. It is absolutely impossible in Ukraine. Let's be clear. Russians were forced to act in invading Ukraine to protect the ethnic Russian population, which is huge, from years of continuous shelling, which at a minimum killed between 14 and 25,000 civilians. The U.S. was also building a huge Ukrainian invasion force to take New Russia, the Donbas, a section of eastern Ukraine that had defeated Kiev's armed forces in 2014, carving out their own states based in Luhansk and Donetsk. Today, of course, they're a part of Russia. Had Russia not invaded, the Donbas would have been likely captured and its pro-Russian population, to put it nicely, decimated. The regime has broken every agreement with Russia since 1991. Those who control the Biden administration said there will be no discussions with Russia whatsoever. Now, Biden was quite willing to talk to the USSR, made several trips there, most notably in 1979 and 1988, for of all things trying to promote peaceable relations and détente. He sought arms control agreements with the USSR as a senator. He and those who control him have negated them under Putin. Even after the invasion of Afghanistan, Biden and the rest of the U.S. government sought better diplomatic relations. There, his words were respectful and diplomatic. Well, today, it's nothing but warfare. When Biden visited Putin in the early 2000s, the tone was completely different. In other words, For the U.S., the Gulag regime is perfectly acceptable. The nationalist Russia, that's what has to be destroyed. Now, the use of Israel as a template for the proxy war that's coming to an end in Ukraine, certainly it's connected to the overwhelming Jewish dominance of the state in Kiev, not to mention the U.S. Without constant war, Ukraine has nothing the West wants or needs. It also means that the casualties will continue to pile up, now in seven digits. There's no comparison between the Ukrainian diaspora and the Jewish one, certainly when it comes to power and finance. The only thing that this big Israel would serve is the interests of Kiev's oligarchs, who are increasingly divided as Zelensky becomes more and more erratic. Still, the regime will stop at nothing to harm Russia, an absolute psychological obsession that's never really received a coherent explanation from official circles. I know what it is, but in terms of even public propaganda, there is no coherent explanation whatsoever. Zelensky lives in his own world now. He has no right to be where he is. He was a comedian before this. Kolomoisky and a few of the other Jewish oligarchs installed him. Once in a while, someone asks him a question that he doesn't want to answer, especially about corruption. Zelensky said that Ukraine has the most sophisticated mechanism to fight corruption, as required by the European Union. And he gave, as an example, the fact that Ihor Kolomoisky has been arrested, now in prison. Of course, the regime condemned Putin's same action against Jewish oligarchs in Russia. But since Kiev and the oligarchs are based on corruption, that's what it is. And it has been that way since the 1990s. So who knows how he really defines the term, if he realizes that there's a problem at all. Then Zelensky, again, given his erratic, his temper, his tantrums, he tried to turn it around saying that during this whole time of war, around $177 billion have been voted for or decided upon. $177 billion, but let's be honest, we haven't received half of this money. Where's the rest? If you find the second half, you will find corruption. Now that's itself is very erratic, but he knows, for the most part, where it went. Most of the aid, whether it be cash or equipment, it doesn't make it to its destination. It's destroyed or diverted. One of the reasons that Zelensky is becoming a liability is the fact that he's a loose cannon. So he said that when the U.S. agrees to send a certain amount of money, the way that it's spent, he says, is questionable. Which, by the way, is an indirect proof that he has no power. The U.S. decides how that money is spent. He uses an example. Ukraine offered to use its own cargo jets to transport American arms, but the U.S. refused and chose to use American cargo jets instead, more expensive. So somehow his very childish reasoning that if we used Ukrainian cargo jets, it would be possible to save money and Kiev could therefore get more weapons. Now, that highlights his cluelessness. First of all, Ukraine's cargo capacity in the air is minimal. Trusting a Ukrainian cargo jet is something like trusting Romanian military condoms. Secondly, Ukrainian transports, they'd be targets for Russian retaliation. Third, using American planes and ships is part of the Foreign Aid Enabling Acts. That's written in law that this is how it's done. Fourth, more weapons are out of the question since the American capacity to replenish what it has lost is gone. I should say something about Kolomoisky. This is the guy who built the Menorah Center in eastern Ukraine, the largest Jewish set of institutions in the world. This is a key part of New Kazadia. It's the headquarters of New Kazadia. Why did Kolomoisky, who created Zelensky, who installed him in power, why was he arrested? Last I heard, he's still in prison. Well, he started to lose favor with Zelensky. Only after the Americans started, quote-unquote, investigating him, again, showing that he has no sovereignty. Not to mention the state needed his oil firms. So his arrest and stripping of at least Ukrainian citizenship permitted the nationalization of most of his assets. But it was when the Jewish billionaire said things like NATO would soon be soiling its pants and buying Pampers. Because the war was going to be lost. Serving his own interests, he wanted a new approach to Russia. So the so-called anti-corruption laws that Zelensky talks about, that exists only to monitor the political loyalties of the oligarchs. Especially now, when it's clear that Zelensky has alienated nearly all of his former allies. His fits of rage, his struggles with delusion and megalomania. This is why Alexander Dubinsky, who had only opposed the recent wave of arrests, was expelled from the ruling party and placed on the U.S. sanctions list. He didn't even do anything. He opposed something. Zelensky comes out of the 1+1 media group. That's Kolomoisky's media institution, and that TV channel aired a comedy called The Servant of the People. The actor, Volodymyr Zelensky, played a school teacher who, against all odds, becomes president while championing an anti-corruption platform. So clearly, the plan was already in motion. It was a way to mock the population. And of course, Kolomoisky installed him as president in real life in 2019. He was always Kolomoisky's creature. The U.S., as August of 2020 began in Miami, alleged that Kolomoisky and his Jewish partners, Boglubov, Mordekhaykov, and Yuri Oleder, obtained all kinds of properties as part of a Ponzi scheme, laundering money through his Privatbank. That was nationalized, by the way, in 2016 to prevent the collapse of the Ukrainian equivalent of the FDIC. Of course, it's selective enforcement, since this is how he's done business since at least the mid-90s. I should point out that his enterprises were routinely bailed out by the IMF. I didn't know the IMF actually bails out individuals, but it does in this case. But the regime eventually lost patience with him. And I also want to point out, and I've said this before, that the nationalization of, let's say, a bank, it means that the previous owner's debts are wiped out. And in some cases, the capital is given right back to the original owner. Now, clean. I mean, Kolomoisky just used Zelensky as his front man. Zelensky removed anybody in the state apparatus who was a threat to Kolomoisky's interests. The prosecutor general, etc. Now, of course, there was no election. You know, you have a tightly controlled media. It was blatantly rigged. A lot of the country was no longer, you know, was not a part of it anymore. But even if you could show me that somehow it's legitimate, the whole system has no legitimacy. So the anti-corruption laws, they exist. First of all, there's no one to enforce them. You know, when you have, I said this in relative to Kosovo and Albania, when you have an anti-corruption drive, that implies that there's a part of the system that's not corrupt. And from there, you can then attack the rest of the system that is corrupt. Well, there is no non-corrupt part of the system. Therefore, you can have anti-corruption measures. But they exist at least to give, and these are written in Washington, at least to give the impression that there's an interest in such enforcement. But, as the Kolomoisky issue proves, it exists also to purge the elite of those who can no longer be trusted. Now, Zelensky doesn't like commenting on the Pandora Papers. I've spoken about that many times back in fall, I think it was October of 2021. The properties, the money that Zelensky has, all of these offshore companies operating in Belize, the British Virgin Islands, Cyprus. His network was itself involved in money laundering from Kolomoisky's Privatbank, I think, a very low estimate. Now, of course, he turns around and arrests them for what he helped him do. He has mansions all over the planet. This, by the way, while Gentile soldiers are slaughtered on the battlefield, much of the time without training or equipment. Zelensky is your typical Khazar. Sociopathic, incapable of self-reflection. It's hard to understand what his motivations are in making these ridiculous accusations, except as a coping mechanism. I mentioned before, when he said, where's the other half? He's accusing the U.S. of embezzling its own money, which doesn't make any sense. Only the recipient, or someone in the middle, would have the incentive to embezzle. You can't embezzle your own money. And maybe if the regime didn't have a tightly controlled media, this would have been discussed at some point. There was one podcast with Friedman, Lex Friedman. I don't know. I'm not going to listen to it, but he mentioned it briefly there. And he claims that all of his money laundering and foreign millions to avoid taxation from Yanukovych, which I think he invented on the spot. Then he says, well, I really can't be open about it. He said that on the podcast. But he doesn't want a scandal to arise out of this. He can't be open about it. He had the guy arrested. Now, since Zelensky is now behaving erratically like this, these events, whether real or staged, are going to increase in frequency. Ukraine was described in 2015 as the most corrupt nation in Europe. And that was reported in the UK Guardian. Talk about the pot calling the kettle black. Transparency International, which of course is not trustworthy. They're a corporate NGO. Of 180 countries, it has Ukraine at 104, which is laughable, which is still really bad. But these ranks are very politicized. So that means it's a lot worse. I can't imagine any other country except Albania being any more corrupt. And then trying to claim that Russia is worse, which is how they compensate for this, with no evidence, of course. The so-called opposition, to the extent that opposition could function at all. I've mentioned him before, Viktor Medvedchuk, said that Zelensky is going to flee the country, which shouldn't surprise anybody. And he says this because he discovered that Zelensky bought a luxury apartment in Dubai. $17 million worth. Now, that's not really news. He has several spacious homes in France and Israel. And I don't know if you noticed, but Dubai, the UAE, all of a sudden is everywhere. All over social media, everyone's talking about it. And that's because Dubai is being colonized by Jewish billionaires. That's why it's the trendy travel destination all over social media. Now, I don't know how Medvedchuk has been able to stay out of prison here, but let me quote him further. A modest 2,000 square foot apartment awaits Zelensky on an island with a warm sea. This is why hundreds of thousands of Ukrainians are dying today. Well, maybe that's 10% of the story, but it's true. It's old news. He continues here. Now, the apartment itself in the Bulgari Marina Lofts complex is actually worth, well, $16.9 million. He continues, Zelensky apparently lost hope in the Americans and in the mansion in Florida that they promised him. He found a new homeland and luxury housing while millions of his compatriots live as refugees and have lost their homes. Instead of helping the pensioners, for whom he whined so much in the West, Zelensky diverts the money honestly earned in the war to tax havens and does not plan to invest in Ukraine, in the economy, or in the country's defense. Well, if you've been listening to me, that's none of that is news. This is just one out of many. Maybe it's a misdirection, because making a big deal about the Dubai apartment, I mean, $17 million, some apartment, but by mentioning it as if this is a revelation, it implies that this is the only one. I mean, the Ukrainian president, he has properties and companies all over the planet through his close friend, whatever that means, Sergei Shafir. He transferred all of his assets and tax havens before the elections, so-called elections in 2019. Shafir and his brother Boris bought two yachts for a total of $100 million. But, you know, the Pandora Papers, you know, it was earlier, of course, but they revealed a lot of these kind of assets, these kind of things. So I'm not sure why this is presented as revelation. Actually, the apartment in Dubai is registered under Sergei Safir's name, closed on December 22nd, according to the Dubai Land Department. So, of course, his image is a ridiculous lie, but that is falling apart when you simply can't hide it anymore. Medvedchuk, though, went one step further. He says that Moscow provides all kinds of help to residents in the former Ukrainian territories that voted to join Russia in September of 2022. He continues, "The president of Russia declared on numerous occasions that for the Russians, the Ukrainians are not enemies. That's why Zelensky's power will be defeated, not the Ukrainian people. Today, Ukrainian soldiers die not for Ukraine, that the regime sold to the West, but because of the corruption that enriches Zelensky and his entire entourage." Well, that's legal treason, talking like that in Kiev. He's not in prison. I mean, the crux of the story is, and I've mentioned this in different contexts, he's spending millions on his lavish lifestyle while Ukrainians are suffering like no one else in Europe. And the West continues to promote Zelensky as this anti-corruption crusader. I mean, it's conceivable that the Kiev apparatus just can't keep up with all of this dissent. That could boil over at any moment. But this is only news for those who really just don't know. You remember, and I discussed this at the time, Zelensky was installed as president on this platform of fighting domestic corruption. I mean, I don't think anyone believed him at the time. But everyone knew then, and we know now, that Zelensky has benefited from corruption. He's helped bring it about. That's why there's sham elections. I mean, the Dubai purchases, yeah, it's horrific, given the circumstances of Ukraine. But certainly, it's not the only time he's done this. I came across a report late last year, a Ukrainian journalist named Diana Penchenko. At least on her social media, she said that as Ukraine goes into the fourth world, 13 Rolls-Royce cars, each one worth about $650,000, 13 were purchased by members of parliament and other government officials. That's just in 2024 alone. That's just a tip of the iceberg. So with this extravagance, the director of Institute of Demography, the National Academy of Sciences in Ukraine, revealed that the life expectancy for men in Ukraine is now 57. I mean, it was bad before then. It was like 66 before. That means there's only a few countries, all of them in Africa, Chad, Nigeria, Central African Republic, at 55. They're the only country that had lower life expectancy. That's the nightmare here. And Zelensky has mostly insulated himself from these realities. Things just get worse and worse. There's a possibility he may flee the country. A guy by the name of Zelensky's actual former chief of staff, Oleksiy Arestovych, said now the Ukrainian president is a dictator who is now divorced from reality. From the first day in 2022, not just now. I think this was a tweet. He said, "First, someone behaves like a dictator, instead of following the normal path of accelerated development, chooses to stagnate, and from there, breeds mass corruption. He then promotes hatred for any opinion different from his own, and then, a year and a half after the invasion, the collapse comes, both in relations with the West and with his own people, so to speak. And no matter how much he denies reality, this will not go away." There was a Time magazine article, awful, by Simon Schuster, that was semi-negative. It was called "Nobody Believes in Our Victory Like I Do." Nobody. That was the title of it. Now Schuster says, "This is an unpleasant and vaguely familiar image. A dictator abandoned by everyone, wandering through the back streets of the bunker, unwilling to face reality and hysterically exclaiming about a quick victory, which of course he's unable to achieve. an authoritarian leader to whom those around him are afraid to tell the truth. All dictators who are divorced, in the name of their fantasy, from reality, end up in the same way. Remember, this is a guy just a year and a half ago was saying is anti-corruption crusader who's going to change the world. But it wasn't Zelensky who was talking about a quick victory. It was the Western media was saying that. He just began to believe his own PR nonsense. That Time magazine article came out in October 30th, 2024, and it said that Zelensky, quote, feels betrayed by his Western allies. Can you imagine the effrontery here? And I'm quoting here. They left him without the means to win the war, only the means to survive it. The scariest thing is that part of the world got used to the war in Ukraine. Exhaustion with the war rolls along like a wave. You see it in the U.S., in Europe. We see that as soon as they start to get a little tired, it becomes like a TV show to them. Well, it's a very expensive and bloody show. Time magazine is a part of the problem. But Zelensky, typical Khazar, is incapable of taking responsibility for anything. Zelensky isn't doing anything that he wasn't instructed to do by the regime from day one. No one accepts his position that he's opposed to any ceasefire. What I started saying in the spring of 2022 was only now being accepted by mainstream writers, who then presented as revelation. As I said, I think one of the very first things I said about this war, I got back from my honeymoon and I said, Ukraine doesn't have the economy to sustain the artificially large army and navy that the U.S. and NATO put together from 2014 to 2022. That was my first key takeaway here. And it's true, of course. But the very fact that now two opposition leaders or people who, you know, well, one, not even opposition, was his former chief of staff, can talk like this. Yeah, maybe there's elements of misdirection, but it certainly sets a dangerous precedent. He simply can't squash dissent like he used to. Ukraine is now increasingly isolated. I also said when the Hamas war began that, well, you know, where are the Jews going to put their attention? Kiev or Israel? So when that war began, there was a pull away from Ukraine, despite the Jewish control in Kiev. The average age of a soldier in Ukraine right now, on the Ukrainian side, is 43 years old. That's how crippled the army is. The young men have been killed, taken prisoner, deserted. This is tragic. The trauma alone will scar the Ukrainian people for God knows how long. The USSR now seems like Xanadu compared with today's Ukraine. The regime has forced Kiev to start drafting old men, much younger men, women, those not fit for service. Who benefits? Not Ukraine, and certainly not Russia, only the foreign oligarchy in Kiev. Well, Arestovich was forced to resign in January of 2023. He started saying a lot of things. It's kind of a minor thing, but on YouTube, he said that Ukraine's air defenses shut down a missile that then was that ricocheted and destroyed a house in Dnieper, then fell on a high-rise building and exploded. That contradicted the official narrative. Now, first off, Ukraine never had air defense forces. It's usually a U.S. or a Russian-made system operated by foreigners. Maybe at the time there was some Ukrainian crews, but they're long gone. Seems to be a minor instance, but he had to resign his position. Something that's for some reason I keep forgetting about. May 7th of last year, Ukrainian intelligence arrested two Ukrainian state security officers who were going to kill Zelensky. Their names are Andrei Guk and another just referred to by his last name, Derkach. The assassins were going to launch a missile and drone attack against the presidential office. They infiltrated his personal security. They collected a lot of data about his schedule, etc. And there were other saboteurs. And of course, you know, it was made public just to blame Moscow for it, but there is no evidence for this. No Russians were ever captured by the SBU. No direct communication with Russian agents was ever uncovered. Of course, Russia does want Zelensky tried for his crimes. He certainly should be. But unlike the Ukrainian government, which maintains a public murder list, Russians are not involved in political assassinations. They don't have to be. There's plenty in Ukraine who want this man gone. And it's not like they haven't been planning on replacing him. Going back to 2022, the Pentagon has this idea that he's used up his artificially inflated political capital, his increasingly erratic behavior, the revolving door staff problems, his contempt for the military. There's a leaked Pentagon document that showed the initial plan was to replace him through quote-unquote elections in Kiev. Of course, it was a rigged election for the suitably non-Jewish Vitaly Klitschko, the former boxer. That was, I think, the plan. Now, Klitschko, in his mayoral races, I think the highest he ever got was 50% of the vote in 2020. In 2008, he only got 18%. His entire career is financed by the West. So if this ever is to occur, certainly he's in no danger of losing any sham election. It may well be that the new Khazaria, the Big Israel project, is the last attempt to seek power by a total totalitarian system. I think it's impossible. I think it's a fantasy. The man has zero support. People close to him have zero support. The Pentagon picked Klitschko because he's not a Jew. But the norm, this kind of dissent, you still have purges and arrests. In Zelensky's mind, elections are totally off the table. The Big Israel Project is the only thing that he has to maintain power indefinitely. And that's a fantasy. Thank you, everyone, for listening to me, and I will talk to you again next week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.